Catch new episodes of Dial the Gate weekends at youtube.com/dialthegate. And for the latest schedule, visit dialthegate.com. Welcome, everyone, to episode 221 of Dial the Gate, the Stargate Oral History Project. My name is David Reed. Thank you so much for joining me in our last episode for today. Michael Adamthwaite, Harak, first prime of Lord Khonsu of Amon Shek, and someone called Anubis. He's joining us for this episode. Appreciate you tuning in. Before we get into the thick of it, if you enjoy Stargate and you want to see more content like this available on YouTube, click like. And perhaps subscribe. It makes a difference with the YouTube and will continue the show to help the show grow its audience. And if you've got Stargate friends out there, share the episode with them. By subscribing, you'll get notified about future episodes. If you click the bell icon, you'll be notified the moment a new video drops, and you'll get my notifications of any last-minute guest changes. This is key if you plan to continue to watch live, because guests, they're working, and you know they're busy, and sometimes things switch around. And clips from this live stream will be released over the course of the next few weeks on both the Dial the Gate and GateWorld.net YouTube channels. As this is a live episode, Michael will be taking your questions through me. So submit them in the YouTube chat to the moderators. The moderators will get them to me, and I will get them over to him. Michael Adamthwaite, Harak, we are privileged to have you on, sir. How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to receive your invite and to be here with you all. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. So it's a lovely sunny day here.
It's dreary in Nashville, believe it or not. So I guess the tables have turned.
The weather patterns. Yeah.
Being what they are, I have to thank you because you were one of my first interviews that I ever did back in, God, this was 2004, I think. And yeah,
wow.
2003 or 2004. I don't think Atlantis had even come on the air, really. And you were one of the first people that I had ever talked with in the franchise. And you helped to get me into the rhythm of what it is that I do now. So I owe you a huge debt of gratitude for helping to sink my feet into the cement or quicksand of what this whole process is. So I owe you a lot, man. Thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you. You know what? I'm so pleased and touched to hear that. You know, it reminds me that no effort is too small or too great, and just saying yes once in a while can give somebody traction. So I've always tried to practice that as a teacher, as a coach. You know, I've been a mentor to some, and you know, just in the voice world, and you know, I love what I do, and you know, why not talk about it? If someone loves interviewing and loves having a channel or a podcast, why not say yes? Let's talk at the very least. You know, openness is I think one of the pillars of success if we want to look at it that way.
Well,
I'm happy for you. Excellent.
Well, I appreciate it very much, and no one goes it alone. You know. This is an industry of networking, and you know, if the more receptive to you are, the more hurt you can be, but you're not going to get anywhere without sticking your foot out the door and trying, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think about success the same way that I think about building a road, except your bricks are little pieces of rejection. You know, it's like you get a no and another no and you know, another no and you take it and you're like, fine. I will put this brick down. I will use it to move forward towards a yes. And then the yeses, they turn into these special little bricks that you're like, okay, absolutely. Look at all those yeses back there. They stand out. So yeah, perseverance is really, I think, a daily focus worth having. stick with it.
Absolutely. Your body of work is extensive. Your voice work alone, it's pretty
Thank you.
extraordinary. Looking back on your career, how does Stargate stack up against all of what you've done? And I'm curious to in the final analysis, where has Stargate played a role in your life, or was it simply one piece along the way? I'm curious.
Well, first of all, the final analysis, I'm sure, is decades and decades and decades away from now. So,
That's true.
in the early days of, my career, I looked at Stargate, and of course now I still very much look at it the same way. It was like going to a university that was both cool, that was both efficient, that was effective, that was logistically well planned out, and there was a lot of storytelling happening. And it wasn't so much like, wow, this is intimidating and I should leave, right? I had, like it wasn't so much imposter syndrome so much as, okay, I can do this. Everyone's doing their own thing. And I'm here because I did something in the room. I just have to recreate that and let the organism that is film and TV sort of happen around me. And in a way, it really was like, jumping to another level and upgrading as an actor, as a storyteller, if you will, because they were so tight-knit as a family and as a crew and as a production that just adding yourself as a piece, is really the only first step that an actor can worry about. And then, to work with so many great actors, I had so many great conversations, and they were all really inspiring. And I owe them in a lot of ways. So yeah, the cast of Stargate, thank you for shaping me a little bit, giving me some traction.
Is the
Yeah,
show
it still stacks up.
it,
Yeah.
you're walking into to season six of a series that's just been given its second burst of life on a new network. Was any bit of intimidation going into that, or was it like, I got this. I got this. I'm Harak.
Oh, yeah, you're not, it's not like you're working with, MacGyver or anything. Right. I mean, for those who don't know, I was born in the early 80s. So by the time I hit sort of like serial TV watching, there was a couple cool shows on. You probably heard of a bunch of them. One of them was MacGyver. And you sort of see and create this iconic, nature around a person because of a character. And when you're young, you don't understand really the star system or film and TV in the way that celebrity is. It's just sort of like that guy is that guy, and you have this purity about it. And it's very, like it's intellectually naive, but it's also like a young kid watching a lot of shows. So yeah, there was a lot of intimidation. And then I stabbed Richard. It was like really not awesome. I've held a lot of props before, man, and I was told to hold it a certain way, and he was recoiling from electrical shock, and the cattle prod was sharp, and he recoiled, and oh, the pain, and oh yeah,
You
no, I was
actually got him.
terrified. yeah
I don't
yeah
remember this
I actually
story.
got him.
So
Oh
this is a
yeah, no,
scene where you guys, Harak has captured him, and O'Neill is
I
bad mouthing as
catch
he always
correct.
does. And then you've got
Yes, of
this
course,
little
and he's sort
conceit
of
over
being,
here.
yeah, yes, it is a very similar looking, if not that exact, cattle prod type weapon. And of course, the props, assistant was like, okay, make sure this affects. They asked me to tell you that you hold it this way so that it looks like it's making contact, so that they can put the zzz, like the little like the zap in there. And I was like, okay, yeah, that should be fine. But of course, I'm thinking, hold it to him and he won't move. Why would he recoil forward? Of course, if not to, subtly, if not really obviously, simulate being electrocuted. So yeah, we came together. He got poked. He let out a really solid yelp. And then he called out the director's name. He's like, Martin, he got me. Oh, God. And I was like, instant white, just completely lost all color in my face. And I immediately had to sort of step back a few feet. And my hand, I'm sure, was shaking a lot. And I think I just said, he told me to keep and he was like, oh, my God, you stabbed him. And he was sort of rolling around on the ground. And I realized now the comedy of it all. But I think he was having me on a little bit. And I sort of had to excuse myself. And Martin Wood jokingly fired the props assistantly, you know, like very quickly. And, you know, it was like, you're fired, get out of here. But obviously he was not. He was, you know, like a beloved family member. But yeah, it was a joke at my expense, I think, at the end of the day. And yeah, Rick had a good come, you know, chat with me and, you know, sort of built me back up a little. But yeah, it was funny.
You know,
it was so terrifying, but funny.
People don't know, and you and I have both done it, gotten in and out of that Jaffa costume. I imagine if you soil your pants freaking out, you know, it takes at least a half an hour to get out and back in. And, you know, it's like.
Yes. And of course, when you realize that you're growing
pants,
you're growing taller in your outfit for reasons that you don't want to explain. And of course, it's like, that's not shepherd's pie in my pants. yeah, no, it was very near to, you know, just like the worst day on set I ever had. I walked outside. I took some air. I told myself, I'm like, you're going to get fired. You got to prepare yourself for that out loud, talking like to myself. Okay, Michael, this is how it ends. The word's going to get around. You stabbed Richard Dean Anderson and it was so bad. Until he came and talked to me, I was like, my career was over. I was already planning, like, maybe I'll go back to school. Maybe I'll get some certification. Maybe I'll drive a, you know, forklift or something. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, I was planning a whole different life.
You know, things happen on set. I mean, look at what happened, you know, recently with, you know, that one film with that one, you know, major Hollywood actor. You know, things we have, there are legitimate, you know, concerns, you know, especially if you're making physical contact, you know, with something that can be damaging with the lead actor, you know, you never know. But Rick, he's a clever one at the same time, you know, and he's gonna get people anywhere he can.
Yeah, and he was very kind and very mischievous in the same moment to both include me into the family by making fun and having a moment, because I think in a way he must have known that I, as an actor growing up watching him on television, I was going to remember that forever. And of course I have, and I do. I'm like, you know, I stabbed him once. So.
The other favorite memory that I have between the two of you is the episode Full Circle, and you come into the you're remembering this. Okay, you come into the the underground pyramid, and an interesting scene ensues of a reaction on your face and playing on it. Tell us the story. This is really funny. If you're not paying close attention when you watch Full Circle, you might miss it.
Yeah, this is my day of I love this line, and I had this beautiful idea, and of course now as I'm remembering, I can smell the burning pyres in my nose, and of course it makes your nose black. Everyone who's been on Stargate will tell you that it makes your nose black, but I'm walking down and there's grit beneath my feet and I'm descending the stairs. I've got my minions. I've got my staff that I took from the guy I killed, I'm pretty sure. And of course I'm going down there and there's like a massive set and there is sand and burning pyres and hieroglyphics and paint and just so much richness and decor. And I always showed up early so I could stand in the space and just take it in. Like even when the lights were off and even when no one was supposed to be in there, I was always like, whoa.
Right.
Not only does this has to feel 5,000 years old, but it looks 5,000, 10,000, 100,000 years old. Right. Of course, you know, like the timelessness, you know, really. And of course I'm walking down and I have my staff and my peeps and my line, and I'm like, surrender or die. And O'Neill says, what? And I'm like, surrender or die. Sorry, we're all closed. Come back tomorrow, right? Like, and he had several different, lines, and he improv several different things, and he was having so much fun with me, which of course harkened back to our conversation outside the day I stabbed
Exactly.
him, which is the comedy. And he said this. He said the comedy between them is so great. You know what I love? The more straight and angry and militant Harak gets, it's like the more fun, the more cutting, and the more jovial and immature that O'Neill can be with him, and he just boils. And I think it's
Oh,
great.
absolutely. Yeah. Well,
You
he
know?
knows.
So we had,
Yeah, go ahead.
yeah, we had great moments.
That O'Neill is a warrior too. So he gets Harak in so many ways. He
Yes. Yes.
there's more alike about them than not in terms of what they do as a profession. And so, when
Yeah.
Rick is running away, when O'Neill's running away at the end of the other guys, and he's about to go through the gate and he goes, better luck next time. He knows what he's getting away with, and then he nearly gets hit, and he's like, I better
Yeah.
get the hell out of here. I mean, there's just
Yeah,
so much
I
going
better
on.
duck and yeah, don't linger too long because anger tends to tighten your groupings when you're a soldier. You just, you'd hold a little tighter, but yeah, no, it was a great experience. It was a great script, and it was a great arc that I never expected to happen. When you're an actor, especially in Vancouver, there tends to be this secondary, tertiary circle of possibility for you because the first circle is very much made up of the cast and the secondary characters within that world. They become more evident and they grow more obvious and clear as we spend time with them. But to get basically what feels like a one-off, you never know the depth or the possibility that lies in a character until you get a call that says, guess who called? And you're just like, who? And of course, when your agent says Stargate called and they've written you back in, like you really do have to sort of, take that moment and just sort of, grab your drink and just, okay. It's a great moment to get called back and to be called back for a bad guy. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
It was awesome.
They're not as simple to play as, one might think. It's so easy to just do the mustache twist, and you can do that, but you're not going to get called
Yeah.
back for that.
Oh,
They'll just write another one.
absolutely. Absolutely. Because there's always a different face to twist a different mustache or to be some sort of, like beast. I mean, I played a lot of characters that were animals. I mean, I was a puppet reference in the Timmy Failure movie. I was a 14-foot canoe-shaped polar bear. Right. There's a lot of, mechanics involved, but it was mostly about the presentation and the essence of the character. I've been a 4'2" dwarf in the world of Warcraft. I was King Magni, totally different than,
Yeah.
playing a silverback in War for the Planet of the Apes and, playing a giant for Steven Spielberg, right? Like everything is its own animal in a way. But when you're playing someone who's just described as, oh, he's the bad guy. You have to, as an actor, ask more questions.
Yeah,
Like,
that's where you
okay, let's
start.
expand
That's
on
not the
bad.
end. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's like the beginning of the job, right? It's like, okay, I did the audition, I went so far, I released all of my intentions toward getting the role, I hit my target, and now I have to fulfill this character and bring it to life in a three-dimensional way. It sort of sets people up that you are not just here to stand and deliver. It's not just park and bark, right? There's more, profound information there if you use your voice and have the idea to ask a question and stand in curiosity of the writing and the story, as opposed to standing in judgment in the things you don't like on the page. Would I blow up a whole planet? No. Would I murder and commit genocide? No. But he did. And I'm curious why. So like tell me about this character becomes a really essential conversation with any director or any showrunner, any writer. I'm trying to, shed a light on all the departments and all the people who helped me. Here, you and I are talking almost 20 years later about a show that still stands up for me and has a very special place in my heart. And I couldn't have done it without writers and actors and directors and crew. And, I know it's very topical right now, but they helped shape every frame of every moment of every appearance I ever had. So I owe them every moment of my Stargate universe life.
Well, yeah, if you're not bringing your A game, you're doing all of them a disservice, you know? And you're doing the
Yeah.
audience potential disservice as well.
Well, I think the audience is so much smarter than anyone has ever given them credit for. There is a lot of nuance that goes into, the art of writing because the subtext or the unspoken word becomes so relevant in the physical representation. They're like, oh, that eye flicker, what she just said to him really meant something, but it was small, right? Whatever it is, storytelling is a vast entanglement of beautiful decisions, impossible to foresee mistakes, and sort of accidental moments of, like just it's it is divine creation. If anyone's ever acted in a scene, that moment when all of a sudden you sort of realize, whoa, that was a little bit like someone rubbed Vaseline over the lens, and it was very, it transformative, transcendent, call it what you will, but it is art. And
Yeah.
it takes so many people. And yeah, if you're not bringing your A game, you have to know that there's a line of people that are standing and waiting for their moment, hoping that, like, oh man, his worst day on set, I'll take it. Like there's a lot of dreamers out there, and I salute every dreamer who's still toeing the line and, trying to make it because, they don't make it easy sometimes.
Absolutely not. No, it's and it does come to storytelling. Come down to storytelling. When, how old were you, and when did you know that you wanted to be a storyteller?
My mother, if she were alive today to nod her head, yes, she would say Michael was always a storyteller. I have a particular moment that stands out in my memory. I was very young and I had what was probably my first aquarium and I had some fish in it and there was a little tiny frog and there was these little minnow fish and I was so happy and I was so proud. And then like one of them jumped out of the tank because I had forgot to put the lid back on because I was doing like feeding, right? And you're young and you feel like you're going to get punished. So, you find the fish dried up on the carpet and you sort of like get rid of the evidence. And then, mom's like, where's your other fish? You're like, well, it died. She's like, what? It died? I'm like, yeah, no. So I buried it in the rocks, mom. She was like, oh, you did, because I don't see any. I'm like, yeah, no, it's in there. It's in there. It's in the rocks, mom. So yeah, no, she was like, tell me what really happened, right? I was a storyteller very early on, but we also got involved as a family in our local community theater program, the Pace musicals, and there were annual shows, Christmas shows, lots of lights and dance and musical theater and so on. So I was fairly involved in that growing up. And then my dad was posted as a military officer to serve a particular role in England, and we lived in England for a while, and I got a role in a BBC production playing a New York bully of all things. And for anyone who's interested, you can look it up. It's a BBC production of Little Lord Fauntleroy. I play Stanley Logan, the bully in the streets. I go over a vegetable cart. Yeah, it was my first stunt. It was like over the vegetables. Over the vegetables, I took a big punch and I went down and they were like, oh my God, are you okay? I was like, sorry, sorry, I'll fix the cart. They're like, no, I love it. Let's shoot it. This kid's ready to go. I had a big scratch on my face and I looked tough. Yeah, I think I
Gotta
was
start
12.
somewhere.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. So that was my first big on-camera experience. And yeah, the storyteller in me has always been very healthy. Yeah, hopefully it never goes away. I mean, I've written scripts that, you know, have never, you know, gone very, you know, far than other than three or four pairs of hands, because it's such an environment out there. So, you know, when you've got something unique, you want to hold on to it and make sure that you're connecting it to the right person. So,
but you don't want to turn off your creative faucet. You know, you want to keep that.
No, no, you absolutely don't. You absolutely
don't hoard your
don't.
Silver bullet. So, something will always come along.
No, exactly. The storyteller always has a silver bullet, you know, or five, you know, in the back for those magical friendships, great networking opportunities when someone's like, I have so much money and everything I read is garbage. Please, please tell me you've got something. You're like, well, hang on to your butts. Here we go. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that day.
Tell me about a role that pushed you in directions that you didn't expect, or that challenged your presuppositions of what you were capable of as a person, or just you know, affected you in an extreme way. No pressure.
Thank you. Yeah, I've certainly had moments on set, you know, where as the villain, just in a blanket way, I've shown up on set in the morning and my chair has been in the tent surrounded by other chairs and other people. And we're all smiling and interacting and, you know, shaking hands, introducing ourselves. And then we go to, I'm thinking of Altered Carbon in particular. I played mean old Mr. Jakob Kovacs. And, you know, I went and I did the rehearsal for a particular scene. I know, you know, the one I'm talking about. And when I got back to my tent, all the chairs were gone and it was just my chair. And it was just this feeling of despair and woe that came over me, knowing that even without shooting a frame, the work I had been brought to do, the sheer monster that he was even off camera, it was like it must have been off-putting. But you know, I've had a lot of moments like that playing the villain, where, you know, a lot of people have come up to me, random people who, you know, may or may not have been crew. It's like, oh, how dare you, you're such an expletive deleted, you know, like there's just like been moments like, wow, okay, my art is impacting people in ways, and they're either dealing with it or joking or whatever. But, you know, that role in particular was a big one. But I mean, I've also played roles that uplifted me in such a way that I didn't think that level of connection was possible. You know, Luca in particular in War for the Planet of the Apes was one of those roles that required quite the opposite of putting on a garb, putting on makeup, putting on a voice, putting on some sort of, hi, here I know. It was shedding of everything. And I mean, I've had the great fortune to work with Terry Notary on, you know, three separate films. You know, Warcraft, he was our movement director. I as mentioned, played King Magni. And of course, it was the BFG with Steven Spielberg. Again, he was our movement director, is to help create our giant characters. Hey. All that sort of fun stuff. But when it comes to War, it was about shedding, you know, not building up like, you know, Butcher Boy, or, you know, building up like Magni to get small, ironically, but it was about shedding everything that I thought I was as a human, that I thought I was as an animal, that I thought I was as an actor or a father or a husband or just a person. It really was just about learning that your muscles wrap bone and tendon and tissue and the energy and the look and the gaze, because you're an animal. And it's this animal with albeit this measure of fiction and this level of sentient thought that, you know, you know, primates within fiction and the disease, they are elevated in such a way, but learning how to sign and, you know, learning how to talk and everything and operate weaponry and move around the world, it was essential. And I give so much kudos and love to my friend Terry Notary for that. But that, in a way, was a role that I could never ask to, I could never ask for more.
You're
from
helping.
From that, it filled up my cup.
I suspect so. You're helping to give birth to a new species. You know, I mean, sure, they existed alongside us, but they are not anymore. They're super intelligent. So you know, that's, I imagine that there has to be a certain amount of freedom in that. Okay, yes, these are gorillas. But they're not our gorillas. There's something more. So where are we going to find those? Where are we going to establish those new boundaries? If they have boundaries.
Yeah, it was sort of like working within, you know, the rules of our world, but being completely in a multiverse where this happened versus it didn't happen. Almost like the parallel universe theory. It's like, oh, the virus escaped. Oh, in this world, it didn't. Right. Like, where are we? I mean, I think anyone who's been paying attention knows that, you know, the plane of existence has all these many different layers. But in the reality of war and that entire franchise, that was the real deal. That's what they woke up with every day. So to create a story and to carry it on in that character really was. Yeah. And I mean, you can't talk about this project without talking about Matt Reeves and Andy Serkis and, you know, Karen Carnival.
Man.
And
Karen.
Of course, you know, I mean, we had Steve Zahn with us as well. And, you know, Terry Notary again, as mentioned, and I just got so fortunate for that audition. And of course it was all secret and nobody really knew anything, but I showed up and Terry said, "You're going to work hard, but it's going to be worth it. Here's what you're going to do." And it was just go from that moment. It was like, "You're going to pop up here. You're going to run over here. You're going to this, you're going to that." And it was like, I had custom arm braces, you know, it was an adventure, you know, and we got to run through a river as a cast, you know, up and over boulders. It was like kids in a candy store.
Karen Carnival is Tom Macbeth's partner. Tom Macbeth played Harry Mayborn in SG-1, big friend of the show. And he talks about how Karen talked about the relationship that Andy Serkis had with all the other apes. Was just pretty, you know, pretty extraordinary gift to have someone who established the standard with Gollum. You know, and is no one's going to have the intel that he does. You know, it must have been just extraordinary.
Yeah,
to
no,
that
it really was. The first moment he came in, it was like every single pair of eyes. You could feel every single head, every single person just. And everyone just all of a sudden, again, it's like it was this very visceral, very animal experience. We all just sort of perked up. And without saying it, it's like a collective that has a unified thought. And it's just, there he is.
Yeah.
And from that moment forward, we were, you know, Matt Reeves was pretty adamant. You are in character. This experience, whatever it is, the next hour, 2 hours, whatever, I think you ended up being like 90 minutes. We were in character, running around, conversing, taking orders. He was checking in with us. You know, it was so real and alive, but him just, you know, gracing us and checking in and, you know, forehead to forehead and accepting everyone in that way. It was so, again, it was like bucket list, you know, I could
for
be,
sure.
I could never be employed again, and I would have that.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you tell us about auditioning for Stargate? Taking us back to that experience?
Auditioning for Stargate. Oh, it was. I do. I was very fortunate at the time to be working on the studio lot in a totally different capacity. I was sort of working in a reader capacity for auditions that were happening for other characters that, of course, you know, at the time I wasn't right for. So I would read opposite the actors, you know, in their pursuit to get cast. And of course, whether you're trying to or not, if you're connected to another actor, you're doing it for them as a reader. A good reader shouldn't overdo it and overshadow, of course, but there's a certain amount of connectedness that can really help a read that's maybe, without note otherwise. Because I've read with some readers that are totally neutral, and it makes it hard to have that exchange, come to life in that three-dimensional way. So I always tried to offer some of that three-dimensionality without overstepping my bounds and, trying to, there was no scene stealing.
Right.
I was
Well, look
just
at
trying to
what,
be supportive.
if I may insert, look at what happened with Harrison Ford on Star Wars. You know, he was brought in
Yeah.
to read lines, you know? So go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. In a helpful way, someone who gets brought in to do something and then something kind of miraculous happens. And, not far down the line, I got an audition for this character that I thought would most assuredly be a one-off, and I just read the breakdown and I inserted myself into the world and I did a little bit of research and I found my voice, which is, I mean, voice connection is probably the key number one thing that I focus on as an instructor, as a voice actor, as an actor in general, as a performer, as a storyteller, because you're in your body. That's where your voice comes from. It's your instrument. And deciding how a character speaks, whether they're amphibious, underwater, from a desert planet, like royalty, or a totally different class of whatever the structure is in fiction, having the voice of the character is essential. And it's the number one thing, that voice connect. So when I brought out that kind of O'Neill, it was very much this vibrato sense of like, my chest is so big because I'm trying to intimidate across the universe, and my arrogance and my youthful, right? And it just sort of evolved into this big barrel-chested, but I feel like I'm almost wearing my dad's suit a little bit, and I think that's what O'Neill nitpicked at. Like failing sideways, I see, or failing
Upwards,
downwards, right? Like,
failing upwards.
yeah, failing
Congratulations.
upwards. Yeah, of course. Yeah, well, again, I mean, there were so many incarnations of that
Oh,
line. But yeah, failing upwards, I see. But yeah, it was really just about bringing that voice and that posture into the room. And again, having that sort of seated nature, like the way I sat down was very, like, I think the scene I had just, my boss was no longer sitting in his chair. So I
oh
was
yeah,
like,
he was
here I am in
deposed
the chair.
by someone
And it
right.
was like, he is no longer here. That is none of your concern. And I was just trying very much to be as stoic in the chair and still as possible, because the idea to be like, I'm gonna play with a cat. Right? Like it's all this sort of like silliness about villains. And I just wanted to be perfectly level-headed and calm and cool and just reveling in the fact that I just spilled blood.
You did.
Ooh, and I killed him on his own ship. Ooh, I'm going to enjoy this in a really quiet kind of way, and I'm going to kill all these humans. Ooh, it was just the anticipation. And I was like, I'm also shaking as Michael, like, holy crap,
Yeah.
holy crap, holy crap. So I was just like, man, if I can't stay still, I'm going to shake out of this chair and I'll lose everything. And I realize I'm like, that's exactly what he's kind of excited slash worried about. He's nerve sighted. So he's just got to be.
He just killed their god. And I'm sure the other Joffa are looking
Yeah.
around like, he's dead. Okay, so I guess I can't be mad at
Should
him because he's dead, isn't he? That
we
wasn't
have
supposed
a
to happen.
meeting?
Yeah. Or do we need an intervention? So, jeez,
Yeah,
that's
right.
funny. Man, oh man. The
Yeah.
I've got to show you this. You think Anubis still wants it?
Oh. Ah!
Go
Nice. That is a
ahead.
very
He's not
powerful
getting the
relic, my
eye.
friend. You be careful with that.
So Easy Sparky wanted to know, did you know Rick was going to hold on to the eye and not letting it go when he handed it to you? Or was that before camera started rolling? It's like,
what?
Give it to me, damn it.
Moment. I did not know. That's a great question. I was anticipating this sort of very authoritative Passover, and I would take it in a sort of, you know, meaningful way, because that's what I had been prepared for. You get direction, there's staging, you go through it, the camera likes the light of the thing, you turn it right here, not here, the arm, right, you go through it all in your head, and then you grab it, and he doesn't let it go. And now, the silliness of holding it up and, like, adorning it like I've won it in combat was just so juicy and wonderful, and he's like, oh, man. After we cut, he's like, that works so good. I'm going to do that. I'm going to keep doing that. He's like, even if we have to, like, he's like, Martin, can we do, like, three?
Oh, that's funny.
And I'm like, can we do a bunch? And Martin's like, don't overdo it, but yes. And I was like, okay, now that I know what we're doing, he's like, but don't you play anything.
No, you have to play it straight. You have to play that as the straight guy.
You can't know. No. He's like, remember, keep it straight. And I was like, oh my God, I'm talking comedy with MacGyver.
Yeah.
In the middle of Egypt underground on a planet. This is awesome. This is awesome. I'm gonna call my mom at lunch. I'm gonna call my mom. I'm gonna tell her what's going on. I'll call my dad.
Lock Watcher wanted to know, what was your relationship like with some of the other actors from that show?
Oh, I can't say enough good things about Amanda Tapping. She is such a wonderful soul. She was such a force on that show. She represented in a actor's capacity. She represented in a director's capacity. She was always so thoughtful of all the other actors who were there. She was just one of the most considerate professional people. I've worked with her since in a capacity where she was directing me. I performed in a show called Strange Empire. I played Jared. It was a very dark and gritty Western. She came in and, man, we did some fun and dangerous and dirty stuff. I love Amanda. She's so great. Chris Judge gave me probably one of the best pieces of advice I've ever got.
Yeah, as a fellow Jaffa. Yeah. And, tell me.
Yeah, of course. Like, our characters were the same, you know, race. And there was a lot of the similar background energy of our culture represented in those characters. So it was the strong silent type, and it was the strong stoic type, and it was this, you know, almost sort of deadpan statuesque kind of mask type. And, you know, I remember he sort of threw his arm around me. We were at a cast party, and I was like, this is so cool. And I was leaving, and I was saying goodbye to everyone. I was just saying, you know, thank you so much for, you know, everything. It's been wonderful to work with you and watch you. And I just can't believe it. Thanks. I hope to see you again. And he sort of put his arm around me, and he's just like, Michael, you're a good dude. And his voice just went way down. And he was like, as an actor, I want to give you one piece of advice. And I was like, please, of course, anything. And I'm like, I don't know what this is going to be, but it's going to be life-changing. He's just like, be careful of the jobs that some people will try to give you. And he just said, hold out. And I was like, whoa, okay. And I thought for myself for the longest time, I was just like, what does that mean? I don't think I slept that night. I was like, what does that mean? But I think he was in a way, at least the way I felt. I mean, I can't put words, you know, more words than he already shared. But I think he was just telling me, be careful, because if everybody makes you, you know, dangerous as you are, then, you know, you could get around
pigeonholed
some, you know, some circles, right? You could get pinholed. So yeah, it was great advice. And I mean, not to downplay that, but yeah, Michael Shanks was always just so wonderful and kind and loving and just always smiling and always just like goofy. Yes, goofy to definitely to a degree. But then the moment action, Jack, I don't think that's safe. He just whoosh, like the glasses, right? He just instantly, like the voice of reason, the bureaucrat, but he was so funny and just such a wonderful energy on set. And no, he was always saying, well, the thing to do is get on a show where you ask other people difficult questions and then you just stop talking. I was like, what are you talking about? He's just like, no, sometimes he's like, when the writing is right, it's right. He just is like, but what does that mean? He would have these like, and he just, it's like, are you sort of like, it's not that you're letting other people talk, it's just the writing is so good and it's so choice. And he was like, just let the writing work,
Let it do its thing. You
just
know, there's.
so yeah, let it do its thing. We've been at this, we've been doing this. It's not even a sentiment that needs to be said out loud. They've proven. And by that point, we started this whole conversation talking about walking into season six and then coming back in season seven. Like, there was zero doubt by that point. Like, why question a word use unless it's something like a contraction, right? Like, I can't do that. You're like, I cannot. Are we good with cannot? To be like, yeah, fine. Personalize the yes, go. We're shooting. Go. You're just right back to it. Like, lunch. Lunch is soon. So yes, uncontracted. We'll go again. Give me that option, and then we'll
That's
go to
funny.
lunch, right? But yeah, such a lovely experience, top to bottom, left to right, through and through to universes beyond. Stargate is a huge part of my huge part of my acting career. Yeah.
I've been meaning to ask you this for a while, and because I don't recall asking it before. There aren't a lot of Jaffa who, question the boxes that they are in, and you had in your case one who killed his god and went to another, and what he presents is that. Well, Anubis is the one true god, and certainly,
Yeah.
you can make arguments that Anubis cannot be killed, which the ancients said you can't kill him. He's not physical anymore. Do you think, I'm curious if you think that Harak knew that the Goa'uld weren't actually gods, but that it was just the family business being a Jaffa, and then that's who you served? Or do you think he actually believed that they were? I'm curious to know what you thought
Well,
deep
I
down about the
was
character.
given, yeah, I was given a lot of direction and a lot of lines in the sand, because there were, principles of the universe where we were playing and storytelling, as well as a lot of historical borrowing of culture and a stitching together of this entire universe, the Stargate multiverse universe, travel through the portal of portals. But I also was given a little bit of license to think about, every moment before the written word that included Harak, right? I asked some basic questions like, hey, what kind of, upbringing would he have had? And they're like, well, Jaffa, they're pretty much like, they're like stormtroopers, they're cookie cutter and so on. And I'm like, okay, so that's one little grain. I'm like, well, how did he become someone significant without being at some point poisoned by either ambition or truth and bitterness? And I was like, ooh, this is really spreading out for me. So, I mean, I started my career and I did a lot of brain mapping, not knowing that I was just ADHD and had no knowledge of it, right? It was sort of like, okay, so it's either truth turns you bitter, or you're poisoned by ambition, but you don't know the truth, and then you're bitter and ambitious. So I was sort of riding this wave of like, okay, if there's all of this backdoor diplomacy slash bureaucracy happening, and there's this sort of idea of a collective for the greater good, but that's not really real, and there's these gods. I'm like, somewhere in there, I think ambition poisoned him. The truth was revealed. It created this lovely sort of bitter layer right between the chocolate and the fudge, and he just said, enough is enough. I am a purist. I will go to extreme measures, and the one true God that has been, you know, clarified to me will make no bones about killing en masse these vermin, these humans, these pests, right? And it was in that moment as an actor thinking, I think I've got enough to go on. I know what my why is. What's the why of your character? I know where my voice is. I know the tone of the show. I know what's real for him. I know what I can't telegraph for the audience's sake. Somewhere in there, all this comedy came in. I was like, what? Laughter at me? Oh, this. And of course, you know, it ended up being wonderful. But yeah, man, oh man. Just, yeah.
There's a lot going on there. You know, beneath the surface.
It was a layered. No, so I thought about somewhere in my character's backstory, he must have been, you know, shown something or told something, and I kind of ran with that, because otherwise, how does a basic faceless stormtrooper rise through the ranks?
Yeah,
if you're not bitter about the truth, like I said, or you know, shown the dark side and given all these ambitions, then yeah, who knows? You could just end up the barista.
Well, a typical Jaffa wouldn't even question killing a Gould. Regardless. No. And he does it, and it's like, wow, just how far is he willing to go? And one of my favorite lines from Braytak to Teal'c in the show is, I watched you play the game with those who would play God. And so does Harak. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Playing games with gods, you got to bring big guns.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Big staff weapons.
Yeah.
Blackham 7, do you prefer fantasy and sci-fi roles over other genres, and how do you deliver a believable performance when doing fantasy and sci-fi? I guess we kind of just talked about like finding the truth to a character a little bit.
Yeah, we did. Thank you for the question. Great question. We've been cycling through, you know, a lot of this, you know, method, at least for Michael anyway. yeah, it's knowing the tone. Knowing the arc of the scene and why that scene was written and why it made it this far and why it's significant in the, you know, like the act, or, you know, pull out a little. Why is it significant in the episode? Why is it significant in the season? Why is it significant in the arc of seven or seasons or so, right? Knowing that a moment is more than just a moment is the first real step. It's the knowledge of that. It's not just a moment. I'm not just here to announce that we're under attack and then I run away, right? I have to bring in the fear, right? I'm going to lose my family. They're on another planet or they're on another ship and I'm running and maybe I, you know, like smashed my knee or got shot like a block away, and you come in with something. And that energy of something is so much more alive than that energy of, we're under attack. Thank you. Scene. Yeah. You know, like, and I mean, I know that some people think that auditioning is simple, but it depends on how you approach your individual work. And the way I approached my work got me on the show. And so I was happy to keep with my habits.
There's a huge gap between the beginning of season seven, when you disappear through the gate on Lengera, Kelowna Lengera, and then you appear in Lost City. Was there a thought that you might not come back if for Anubis's big finale? You know what? And you got the call to come back and die with him. You know what was?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's kind of again, as a storyteller, you know, I always liken it to the choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
Those books are very familiar to me. They're a huge part of my childhood. Yep. And I realized that probably somewhere in some town, there was a book where only a couple pages were used to tell one aspect of the story. because people chose to go other ways, right? Where does the story go? That's not up to me. I'm a page. I'm less than a page. I'm less than the words. I'm the magic in the ink, right? They are the message. They wrote it. I bring the magic. I create all that life. I fill up that page with all the wonderful, beautiful ink that they've given me. And then hopefully in the end, there's some money somewhere because an adventure was had, and that's entertainment.
Right.
And that's the business, right? Yeah. Message plus magic equals money. But as an actor, you're not in control of where the message goes. Mm-mm. You just get to stand with your magic and say, I'm here. Who needs some magicking? You know, I could be a really good merchant. I could find a few things to sell, maybe buy a few. Or I could be a tiny little ninja, you know, just hanging out in the Lego universe for, you know, a lot of years, thankfully. Right, you know, like I've been around the universe with no control or management of anything. It's just a little bit of magic that I infused every time to this message that needed it.
Yeah.
And yeah, there was a little bit of money over here sometimes.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. You gotta grease the skids. we had Patrick McKenna on last week, and Patrick, you know, used the analogy, I'm a French horn, you know, this particular script, does it call for a French horn? It may not need one. You know, that makes a lot of sense.
Very well said.
He knows what he is.
Yeah. We are instruments.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, we are instruments, and we cannot shape ourselves in every way, shape, or form, but we get really good at finding the forms that we fit into and that fit us in kind, so that comfort, not so much that similarity, because not a murderer, other guy might be, right? Yeah. But it really is just about becoming that willing instrument to, I think, just help the vision of that music come to life, or that shot, that story, that scene, that movie, that series, you know, however long or short, we are the moments that we portray. And I've been lucky to have quite a few so far.
You know, that's and recognizing your blessings, It's so easy to get jaded about everything that's wrong, because there is a lot wrong.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot that's been right.
Yeah.
So, and remembering that.
Yeah. My worst day, I'm sure, would be somebody's dream come true. And I just have to look around and, you know, see the world as, you know, pieces of possibility and pieces of myself and pieces of, you know, the love that's in all of us. And if we're not okay with saying that, that's maybe your first question. You know, why can't I throw the word love around? I love my job. I love my life. I love everything about what I get to do when I get to do it. It's a pretty rich existence.
One more fan question here, and then we're gonna talk a little bit about Cameo.
Totally.
Dan Zimmerly, regarding Harak, do you think he survived? And if so, where do you see that story could go? I mean, the ancient drones did put a few holes in your ship, you know? But I suppose he could have,
you know,
gotten into a...
There's again, that feeling of, you know, create your own adventure. The pages got turned in a different direction. And I know that when one soldier in one army loses it all, that sort of opens up the can of worms for so many possibilities. But I like to think that he sat in a burning pile for quite a while and thought about his missteps. He thought about his mistakes. And I think somewhere in there, he just took a page out of the dude's life book and said, you know what, man, I'm going to let my hair grow. I'm going to find a beach. I'm going to just like eat some fruit and chill out and think about what I've done. And maybe just, you know, maybe just eat some, you know, like humble pie for a while. Yeah. Maybe he's just stuck on a beach in the desert of the universe somewhere.
I suspect
shaking his head. You
I
know.
Suspect it.
I should have gone to art school.
I suspect it would be an iceberg, Michael, to be perfectly frank, because they were at the Southern Pole.
Yeah.
And Stargate Timekeepers is coming out. And the first level is the first level is the aftermath of Antarctica with the Death Gliders and Alkesh burning in rubble. So I don't think he shows up, but I just think, you know, that would be a cool idea if they found
if you were unconscious in some rubble and you woke up at the South Pole, you would make it to the beach somewhere, son. You would find a way. I would braid down wiring together. I would lash them to polar bears. I'd be like, yo, we can do this. And I would create some snowboard material and I would just be like, let's go to the beach. Me and you. Yeah, total disbelief. That would absolutely be how he lives.
So you are on Cameo now.
I am. I'm on Cameo. I'm connecting with people. I'm DMing with, you know, some, you know, fans who, you know, are, you know, very friendly and very kind and have been super nice to me. And, you know, I've put out some videos, some request videos. I got to do a roast.
Oh,
very fun. Yeah, it's been really great.
Are you eating an eclair? Is that what you're
super
eating?
Cool. Yeah. My son took that picture. We were at our sort of, big, lovely, you know, coffee franchise. And we got special donuts that day because it was daddy daughter Sunday. I was out with my two little kids and they decided that I needed a picture with a donut in my mouth.
Funny.
So he took a picture of me. She took a different picture of me, which didn't turn out so well. Cause of course I was blinking. And then I took pictures of them with their donuts. And I was like, you know what? That's a really funny picture. And he's like, you should use it more often. It's funny. People like funny, Dad. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Everyone's been out there trying to be serious for decades. I'm gonna profile like this.
Right, exactly.
It's like, no. I'm like, yeah, stick a donut up there. Yeah. Yeah. Have a laugh. Yeah.
I posted the link to Cameo in the description below for
that's amazing.
Video.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Where else can we be seeing you? Is there anything else in the popper that we should be aware of?
Well, you know, I've been pretty active on TikTok the last little while. Of course, as I was mentioning to you in our preamble, my studio space/office space was in a very long period of flux as things were moving around the property and, you know, renovating things in the house. So my YouTube channel definitely slowed down, but, you know, I'm back at it. I'm going to find a new video game. I like to, you know, put up video game play with me's where I basically...
Okay.
I do voices. I do voices. And of course, some people have been asking me, hey, would you play through the new Resident Evil 4 that you're the merchant in? Would you do some merchant walkthrough voiceover? And of course, I'm considering that amongst other, you know, kind of fun offers. But I also like to play video games with my kids. So yeah, I'm hoping to put some stuff back up on my YouTube. And yeah, my TikTok's been really active. Anyone who has seen my Twitter or X account knows that, I get hacked here and there. Okay. You know, I lost my verification badge because I won't pay for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not on X so much. I'm not on Instagram so much. But, yeah, people can find me on Cameo and TikTok and, of course, my YouTube channel, The Blue Curtain Show. So
check it
out.
I will add the link for that one as well. The Blue Curtain Show?
The Blue Curtain Show, because of course, you know, anybody who watches my opening video, it's me in front of a camera auditioning over and over and over and over again for roles. And it's just the blue curtain. It's like, hi, I'm Michael Adamthwaite, reading four, the wizard, guard number one, merchant seven, right? Like it's all the hilariousness and it's like, yep. Yeah, really my life, my career has kind of become a strange little TV show, you know, of mediocre quality that posts infrequently when I can cobble together my time and my life. And I stand in front of a blue curtain in a sort of very strange old fashion that I pretend things and I use curtain rods for rifles and I say really terrible things. And then I feel bad and I'm like, oh man, okay, all right. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. Yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. All those people are really alive.
It's acting.
Fine. It's fine.
It's right? Not really like, real.
It's acting. It's not really real. So yeah, that sort of inspired the Blue Curtain show. In 2022, fun fact, I did about 300 hours of editing for over 150 auditions between film, TV, and voiceover and video games. So I very much got to know staring at myself and those blue curtains. And I was like, you know what? Do something about it, right? Well, but know,
I heard Jack Black say a long time ago, if you get 1 in 10, you're doing good. You know? So it's not an easy world out there. So
no, and I mean, depending on what filter you're using on my IMDb, I've either got over 1,200 credits or over 200 credits. So like, what are you gonna say?
Exactly.
It's either like you either have the rent money or you don't.
That's it. Yeah. Are we eating right. this month, kids?
Yeah. Yay!
Daddy got to go to work.
I always laugh when I hear Dante Bosco's voice. He's like, okay, what are we having? It's like, you know, my residual check lottery. Is it Taco Bell? Are we going for steak and lobster? I'm like, I hear you, man.
Are we doing ramen?
I hear you. Are we doing ramen tonight? You having sushi bowls?
Gotta count our blessings, man. So
always, every single day, no matter what, you know, we have one more 24.
Yeah.
We open our eyes, we get one more day. Yeah. And if we're not here for it, then why are we here? You know, because living for tomorrow doesn't work. Living for yesterday doesn't work. So I always remember, you know, Master Oogway, right? Quit, don't quit. Noodles, don't noodles. You are too focused on what was and what is. Today is a gift. That's why they call it the present.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a wonderful sentiment reinforced by animation and amazing performance. It's, yeah, I mean, that's why voiceover can be the total package. You know, it's great work, and it transcends our smallest bad moments and, you know, lifts us up again. So yeah, blessings.
I had a serious car accident 5 days ago. And
David, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. And no one,
I'm
no
so
one,
glad we're here.
No one was hurt. I only hurt myself.
Wow. That's,
you know, it's this week has been really interesting because, it's, one of the things that I always say to myself, and it's Stargate, kind of Stargate related, is make good ripples, you know, and every once in a while you're hit upside the head with a bad one. And so in doing this show, and talking with folks like yourself, getting a chance to reconnect with people from the past and share, stories about, hope and, the possibility of a better tomorrow than today, you know, in shows like Stargate.
Yeah.
I mean, that incident put me in a, it made me appreciate that I do this show and bring people together and get to talk like, and get to spend time with folks like you. So it means a lot to have you. Absolutely.
Bring it in.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Thank you for coming on, Michael.
Yeah.
It means the world to me to have you. This is kind
tremendous.
Of full circle for me. So.
Yeah. No pun intended, but,
that's right.
Yeah, it has been a full circle conversation. It's been a full circle, Stargate whirlwind of, thoughts, feelings, emotions, and memories. And I really appreciate you. I'm so glad that you're okay and that we're here today. We were able to have this conversation. I send you my love and
I
healing
appreciate it. I
vibes.
love you too,
I
man.
hope you're back
Yeah,
to
just
100% just as soon as
bruised. Just
possible. And
bruised. So, but
yeah,
go
oh,
back to
that's
your
so
boss
fortunate.
and tell him he's not getting the eye.
Yeah.
All right? So.
Yeah. He's gonna have to pry it out of my cold dead hair.
This is a pleasure, brother. Thank you so much for
it's
your time.
tremendous. Thank you so much.
You
Thanks,
be.
everybody. I appreciate you all being here. Take care, and
Thanks, Michael.
wherever you go, travel boldly.
Be well. Michael Adam Thwaite, everyone, Harak in Stargate SG-1. This was really cool to have him on and to reminisce. I forgot what a funny guy he is. Oh my God. So I hope you enjoyed that episode. We got several more coming later this week. We're doing at least one midweek coming up, which we don't normally do. We usually keep them on the weekends. But hey, if there's availability for a member of the cast or crew, we're going to jump on it in this extended season three. We're just taking advantage of the time that we have with a lot of behind the scenes people who are available right now. I have a couple of questions from fans directed at me. I think these were from the episode with Mario Zapardi. Teresa MC wanted to know, have you thought about having a show with, example, Gary Jones as the host and you be the guest? You can show off your collection and your stories. So we've had Gary host several fan episodes with us. Those are in the back catalog already. So Gary's spoken with fans, and we had him on for episode 199 with me and my team. In terms of the Stargate collection, there is something in the works. I don't know if it's going to air next year, but we are shooting it next month at my house. We're going to go through the Stargate collection here and share some rare memorabilia, some you've never even seen. So that's going to be really cool. Susan McEwen, to fellow viewers, the DVD I have is the original cut of Children of the Gods. Did the censorship affect other episodes? So we talked a lot about Children of the Gods in the previous episode with Mario. The episode is trimmed for the nudity in the broadcast version, but it's not on the DVD version. The only other episode that did that, and there are minor tweaks for whatever reason from production to DVD and then to broadcast. The only other one that I know of is in the Within the Serpent's Grasp, and O'Neill and Scarra are, well, O'Neill and Chlorel are talking, and Chlorel says something to O'Neill, and O'Neill says, "That's bull. That's BS. That is cut from the broadcast version, but it is on the DVD. That's the only other one that I can think of." So, appreciate you to all tuning in. My tremendous thanks to my moderating team. I had Tracy and Anthony on all day today. Absolutely, fantastic. You guys pulled all the way through with me here. I really, really appreciate it, guys. My thanks to Summer. And let me see here. I want to get everyone's name right. Make sure I mention everybody. Summer and Jeremy and Reese as well. Tremendous thanks to Frederick Marcoux at Concepts Web, our web developer over at Dial the Gate. He keeps dialthegate.com up and running. A few more shows are going to be added. You think dialthegate.com, you think it has a lot listed right now. I got a couple more coming down the pipe. I got an email confirmation while we were on with Mario as a party. There's a couple of, let me just say, there's a couple of dual interviews that are coming down the pipe. One is already posted there with Suanne Braun Hathor and Jacqueline Samuda Nirti. We're going to have them on October the 7th for a two-way interview. That's going to be fun. And I've got a couple more coming as well due to popular demand. Let's just say Mika McKinnon and David Hewlett want to do another Science of Stargate episode. So let's we're just figuring out the dates for that and a couple of more along the way. My tremendous thanks to all the folks who continue to make my show possible, to Linda Fury as well. I appreciate everything that you've done for me and making this continue to happen week after week. And thank you all for tuning in. And I think my mother was in the chat as well for this episode. Hi, Mom. My name is David Reed for Dial the Gate. I appreciate you tuning in, and we will see you on the other side. Dial the Gate is hosted and executive produced by David Reed. The producer is Darren Sumner. Co-produced by Linda Fury. The composer is Neil Acree. Animations by Bryce Ors. The production assistant is Jennifer Kirby. Moderators include Summer Roy, Keith O'Mell, Tracy Noller, Jeremy Heiner, Reese M., and Anthony Rowling. Logo design by Deborah J. Bell. Additional effects by Thomas Tots, with contributions by model makers Chris Baker, Stephen Barr, Kevin Zabo, and Tom Paris. The archivists are Linda Fury, Zachary Adams, and Fred Eric Marcoux. For general inquiries for submissions, please contact us at dialthegateshow@gmail.com. Visit our website for the upcoming schedule, as well as an archive of our past episodes at dialthegate.com.